Couple months ago, whenever you asked me to talk about this galaxy rotation curves on dark matter, the last Friday, she decided to change her mind and asked me to talk about this galaxy in general, so which was, you know, an unwelcome surprise, but so I'll have to do two talks at once here. So let's start with the first one. And first, you learn, at least you would learn one thing from this talk, and it's that no talks done with advertising these days. So this is my sponsor, of course. And,
I've never seen that. I've never had seen that. The other interesting thing is that when you have this So this is
of
divided by the total order from matter to the star complex star of matter.
You could do, right now, even in negative simulations where you include some feedback that is essentially still consistent with observations at redshift zero, you end up with a problem that most of the mass that actually makes it to the disk is the mass that collapses early, and thus the mass that has low angular momentum. And you end up with this problem. These are the disks that we simulate at a given rotation speed, and they'll see almost an order of magnitude off. Okay. So this is actually going to be a very difficult problem to solve. There are many ways, you know, possible venues to solve this problem. One that Hojun Ma will also talk about on Thursdays, essentially prevent the low angular momentum systems from actually collapsing into disks, turning into something else, perhaps spheroids. Whether that works or not, it's not clear. Other possibilities are warm dark matter, delayed baryonic collapse, and also feedback on steroids, as we call it, a high redshift. And the idea here is that at redshift 3, when the central parts of the disk were being assembled, feedback was much, much more efficient. So starburst was the dominant mode of star formation, and galaxy winds and outflows is much more prevalent than it is today. And that essentially at that time got rid of all the low angular momentum gas that was supposed to collapse, and allowing only the higher than average angular momentum to collapse later on. Which one of this is actually true, I am not prepared to conclude at the moment. Now, do I have 5 more minutes? In the 5 minutes that I have left, I will switch technologies here, and I will address the problem that Guinevere wanted me to talk about at least two months ago, perhaps not now, and it's the rotation curves. And this will be just a preview of a discussion we'll have tomorrow morning, I believe, sorry. So the one thing that one learns from rotation curves is that they all look alike. Since they all look alike and the galaxies don't look alike at all, it's very hard to draw strong conclusions from galaxy rotation curves. That's the thing I've learned, at least, after working on this for a little while. For example, take the upper plot. It's just radius in kiloparsecs versus rotation speed for galaxies of, you know, rather small ranges in rotation speeds, and they correlate quite strongly, the shape, if you want to call it shape this way, correlates rather strongly with surface brightness. Lower surface brightness galaxies essentially rise more slowly. When you scale that to scale lengths, then that more or less goes away, and all these rotation curves look alike when the radii is scaled to the scale length and the velocity is scaled to the maximum velocity. So can this be explained in this kind of called dark matter models? Actually, can, and it works rather well. This is under the assumption that two galaxies of the same velocity live in two halos of the same particular velocity. Okay? So take two halos of the kind of structure that I proposed earlier on. Now you have two, you have the, this is, these are the two disks you're putting in. The halo responds adiabatically, this is the assumption we're making, responds adiabatically to the assembly of the disk. And if you have two disks of two different surface brightnesses, these are the rotation curves you actually predict. So the higher the surface brightness, the flatter and the more steeply rising things become. Of course, you can do this in much, much more detail, but the idea is definitely there. And why this is the case is because of this shallower than isothermal region in the central region of the halo, which makes the circular velocity contributed by the halo to rise very slowly with radius. So what happens if you scale this to the exponential scale length? You get something like this. They again look reasonably alike. Now, let's go and do this in slightly more detail. So let's take the rotation curves that have been published and see if we actually put, you know, this NFW-like halos and still come up with reasonable fits. I did that for about 100 and so galaxies. This is just two of them, high surface brightness and low surface brightness. This is taken from the sample of de Blok and Magoff. This is just from the Beckmann thesis many, many years ago. I can see that, you know, you can do rather well. On the left, you have an NFW fit. On the right, you have an isothermal profile with a core. And the idea is that you can get away in these galaxies, no problem. And this is actually true for most galaxies, except for a few. And so it's the few that give you trouble. This, I for this particular galaxies, I don't recall, but I can show you later on, you know, I'll show you later on the Cs that we actually find. Excuse me? I'll get to that in a second. Let me get to that point. So, of course, as I said, there are some galaxies for which this doesn't work. This was first pointed out by Ben Moore and Joel Primack and Ricardo Flores about 6 years ago. And this is just a plot taken from Magoff and de Blok, which makes essentially the same point. There are some galaxies for which the shape of the rotation curve, at least the published rotation curve, seems to be inconsistent with this, you know, this N, this outer minus one shallower than isothermal central profile. This is trying all possible values of C or possible values of V200, trying to match it. You see, you cannot get the right fit. If you match the inner regions, you are off in the center. If you match the outer regions, you're off in the center. So there are some galaxies for which this is a problem. Now, it seems that most of the galaxies, at least from the block in my Gauss sample, are actually severely affected by beam smearing. So this is taken from Rob Swatter's et al. Paper, in which he actually went back to some of those galaxies and actually collected H-alpha rotation curves. And you can see that actually the situation now changes dramatically. The blue ones are the H-alpha rotation curves. And the rise of the velocities near the center are actually much steeper than the H1 rotation curves that were derived earlier on. This point is also made by Frank Vandenbosch and collaborators, who had actually reanalyzed the data and concluded that if one to take into account beam smearing in a parametric model, you can actually have much higher circular velocities near the center than the mean rotation speed that is derived through the usual H1 analysis would have you believe. And that's actually very hard. The conclusion from Frank Vandenbosch collaborators is that it's very hard to put constraints on what is the actual shape of dark matter halos near the center. And essentially, the conclusion is that most, actually all, of the Magloff and de Bloch galaxies they reanalyzed, these are LSBs, which are larger than 100 kilometers per second or so in rotation, are actually consistent with the Cuspy halo, like an NFW halo, and actually consistent with other kinds of Cuspy halos as well. Now, they also conclude, and they looked at two particular galaxies, two dwarfs, that when you go to the very, very low surface brightness dwarfs, this actually is still a problem. This is just, these are the two galaxies that I looked at, NGC 3109, DDO154, and you can see here, again, it's the same problem. The green one is a fit with a core, the red one line is a fit with an NFW, and you see the Cuspy halo is doing much worse. So, one solution to this problem is that we actually have missed the actual prediction from cold dark matter, and this is an idea that was proposed by Andrei Kratsov and collaborators, and this is their plot from their paper, in which they compare the circular velocity of an NFW-like model with the circular velocity they actually find, and they find that actually NFW may predict velocities that are too high near the center. I think this actually makes a very interesting point, which is not only the one that actually the velocities may have been overestimated by the NFW fit near the center. It makes a big point, the interesting point that the scatter is actually quite large. So even if the things are on average like NFWs, the rotation curves are not on average, especially near the center, may have actually quite different shapes. I think that Tolia, at least was Tolia and Joel, were talking privately about this. Their conclusion now is that they may have actually overestimated their numerical resolution near the center, and actually these curves are actually moving up and matching better with an NFW, and this will be actually part of the discussion later on. So it may, but I think the most interesting point that will perhaps won't go away is that there is a variety of shapes of the potential near the center. So we're still left with if that is true, and they're actually much steeper than the profiles than they had proposed in that paper, then we're still left with the problem with these galaxies. So what can we do then? Well, unfortunately, this has taken a few years because it requires hard work. We need to go back to these galaxies and study them in detail. And this is actually not that difficult. At least there is one galaxy for which there is an H-alpha rotation curve measured near the center. This is NGC 3109. This is the H-alpha rotation curve near the center. I can see right away that there's something really funny going on here. The two are gas components, which in principle should be tracing the potential well, the same potential well, but they're giving you completely different rotation curves near the center. And of course, this is data from Carnian. It was published in 1995, I think. So this tells you that there's something really strange going on. Actually, if you go to 3109 and you look at the optical picture, it's a mess. It's actually an interacting galaxy. It's almost a merger. So perhaps not surprising then that H1 and H-alpha don't face each other, but it gives you the unwarm, unfuzzy feeling, in the words of Carlos Frank, and the joke that people from the program will understand, that you really are not measuring the circular velocity when you measure either the H-alpha or the H1. So given that this is a mess, I think we should not be pressed into drawing tremendous conclusions out of that particular case. Let me turn now to this other case before I conclude. This is DDO 154.
this is actually the same original data that Karajan had from which the other rotation curves were derived, but it's now been analyzed by Rob Swatters on much higher resolution. So the high resolution data was there in the original data. They just looked at it on a much lower resolution in order to concentrate on the outer regions where there's a warp and perhaps a hint of a decline in the rotation speed. Now, when you look at a high resolution, you see the H1 map here. It's actually a ring with clumps around it. So most of the H1 flux is coming from these clumps, which are clearly, not tracing the cyclic velocity all the way from the center outwards. When you actually take this into account in the model and try and estimate realistic error bars from it, this is something that Rob Swatters has done, you actually come up with error bars which are at least 2 or 3 times bigger than the original ones that were published in the Karajan paper. And this essentially allows much steeper profiles. This particular case I'm just showing you is not even the best fit. One that has a concentration of about 7 and a cyclic velocity of 50 kilometers per second with a mass-to-light ratio of about 1 in the stars. You can see this actually goes through all the error bar points. So you cannot at all exclude this as a very reasonable fit to the data. Now, the good thing about this VV144 is that there's a luminous galaxy here, and it's not nearly as disturbed as NGC 3109. So actually, there's the hope they can actually go and measure an H-alpha rotation curve for this galaxy and compare and see what you get. Is the velocity rise really much steeper than the H1 velocity rise? I think Rob knows the answer. He hasn't told me yet, but he will show it. He will show it tomorrow, and I think I'm done. Right? Okay, so I'll stop there. Thank you.